Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Professor Pete Lunn, Head of Behavioural Research at the ESRI. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brendan.
So, Pete, you've been looking into something for us, and it's about a pattern that seems to be spreading across the world. And this is a story that's been bubbling away there now, I think, for a while. And it became a big talking point around the American elections most recently. But we can tend to think that Generation Y is more liberal in general, that young people are more woke, if you will use that word. But what we seem to be seeing is the fact that there is a growing ideological gender gap developing now between young men and young women, yes?
Yes, that's absolutely right. So you can see in international data now, if you look at political attitudes and increasingly voting patterns, that young men and young women are diverging in how they vote more so than previous generations.
So to put it in context then, if we go back, when would we first have become aware, or when are there stats for men and women thinking and voting in different ways?
So, unfortunately, I've got to rely primarily on stats from the United States and the UK and some other larger developed nations. The Irish statistics we can say a bit about in a minute, but we don't have such good statistics. But if you go back for the countries where we do, what you find is following universal suffrage, when women got the vote, they tended to vote very similarly to men. Often slightly more conservative, although that's hard to measure because women live a little bit longer and older people vote more conservatively too. Okay. But it tended to be the case for many decades, actually, that women would vote slightly more conservatively than men. That started to change in America in the 1980s. When women started to become more liberal and you started to get a gap opening up. So the way the gap is usually measured is you say what proportion of men voted for the president who won, what proportion of women voted, and if it's 52% men, 48% women, then you say there's a 4% gap, right? That's the gender gap in voting for the president. That gender gap during the Reagan years got up to around kind of 7 or 8 percentage points where men were more likely to vote for Reagan than women. It was always in single figures, though, until we get into the internet age, since when it's accelerated.
Okay, so the internet changed everything, did it?
The internet has absolutely changed things, and we can see that, and that's in the international data, not just the American data.
So what happened then?
So what we see is post around 2010, what we can see is that the voting patterns and political attitudes of men and women start to essentially accelerate away from each other. Now, it's important to note that this isn't just a gender phenomenon. It's very unusual for us to see it as a political difference between men and women, but it's part of the broader phenomenon of polarization. We can also see bigger gaps by age and bigger gaps by socioeconomics as well.
Okay. So did the growth of the internet as well, did that bring a new kind of thing into politics as well, of what we might broadly call culture wars, identity politics, and the battles around that?
Yes, absolutely. So for a long time, political scientists would tend to segment people politically according to whether they were right or left wing on economic issues and whether they were conservative or progressive on social issues. And you get people who are right wing economically but were social progressives and so on. You could mix and match a bit. What has clearly happened is on that social dimension of progressive versus conservative, which has been with us for a long time. You go back to the 1960s, there were many battles over, you know, conservative versus progressive issues on gender and other elements to do with personal choice and particularly kind of sexual conduct and marital behavior and so on. But what's happened is those kind of issues, since around 2010, we're getting much greater polarization on those issues. And that also includes polarization by gender. And it's pretty clear what the reason for that is. It's pretty clear that what's happening is that the content that people are engaging with on these issues is itself becoming more polarized, so that people are watching and listening to and reading things that are being curated for them that are specifically for, as it were, conservatives or progressives. And what that's doing is it's pushing greater polarization on social issues, which, if we want to call it the culture wars, we can, but that's what it is.
Okay. So what you're saying there is that essentially there is not an agreed reality then anymore for people. You get your own reality when you go on the internet, yes, and your own view of the world.
Yes, that's essentially correct, although I want to be really careful about this, because the expression that you haven't used but often is used is the idea that there's an echo chamber, that what you're doing is you're having material that's curated for you that is for what you already believe. That, you know, the idea of an echo, you make the first noise and it bounces back to you. That isn't actually what's happening. The echo chamber is not a great metaphor.
Okay.
Because what's actually happening is material is being curated for you that the algorithm or the individual in the marketing department thinks you want. And that isn't necessarily what you believe already. It might be what you are susceptible to. And one of the things that's very interesting here is seeing the degree to which young men are being attracted towards the extreme right and the kind of material that they're looking at.
Okay. And do we have any idea then why there's a good quote here from a guy, Hassan Dogan Piker, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. He's a YouTuber and a video game streamer, right? And he said before the recent elections in America, if you're a dude under the age of 30 and you've any hobbies, whether it be playing video games, working out or listening to a history podcast, every single facet of that is dominated by centre-right to Trumpian right. So in other words, if you're a young man interested in certain things, you're going to be pushed in that direction. Is there a reason for that?
Yes, because it keeps you watching, reading and listening. I mean, it's entirely about that. And what happens is, I mean, it's not necessarily overtly political content. I mean, it's attitudes that are embedded in the content. It's jokes that are told within the content. It's the kind of people you identify with. It's the kind of role models that are being put in front of you. A lot of this is very subtle. I mean, my lab down at the SRI has done work on how people form opinions and how hard or easy it is to change those opinions. And you are disproportionately influenced by the people you encounter first, the arguments you encounter first, the things you hear and see most commonly. So if you're in a cultural space which is not very diverse, which is throwing at you material that's very, very similar, you are going to adopt attitudes and values, including political attitudes and values, that are very similar to the people that you're engaging with on such a regular basis.
Okay, but again, I'm not fully understanding the link between, if you're into sports and gaming and whatever, the link that brings you then to a worldview of kind of more Trumpian or more far rightiness or more anti-women, maybe that whole manosphere thing. Is there a fertile soil there or something among, you know, guys who are gaming, guys who are into MMA or whatever, that a feeling of alienation or aggrievement that is kind of being drawing them in that direction?
So that's a really good question, because one of the things which is really a discussion for another day, but I'll just give the basic facts of here is, internationally, there is a reduction in the mental health and well-being of young people, which almost certainly makes for more fertile ground, because people who are disgruntled, people who are not having a good time, are going to be more easily persuadable to alternative points of view and more extreme points of view. So that's there as well. I should be really careful here, though. I mean, this is not only happening among young men. I mean, young women are also having content that's pushed towards them that is also pushing their political views. It's just it's going in the opposite direction. Young women are becoming more liberal and more green.
Okay. And how big is this divergence, what we're seeing around the world in the stats?
Well, so in the US elections, it's got to the point now where it's expressed through the ballot box. You're talking about a 10 percentage point difference between the genders, which is pretty big when you think traditionally about what people have done and what people have been voting on. Across other countries, you can see really large gaps as well. So particularly young men in Germany being attracted towards the far right. You can also see in the UK that there's a big gender gap opening up in support for the Reform Party, Nigel Farage's party, so the sort of most extreme right wing party in the UK political spectrum. So you can see this is happening in multiple countries worldwide.
Are we seeing any of it in Ireland?
So in Ireland, I'm glad to say, actually, that it's not something we can yet see. But we need to be really careful here. We thought we were insulated from polarisation for some time, and we've discovered in recent years that that's not true. And one of the things that's definitely in the Irish data, I mean, you can see a little gender effect in that men are more likely to vote for Sinn Féin than women. I mean, that's probably in the data, but there's not much else. What you can definitely see is a really, really large age divide.
Yeah. Did we see that in the election just gone?
We absolutely did, and it's really big.
Okay. So that's the potential polarisation here, is it, between a generation who feel that the status quo has not served them and their parents.
Certainly that's the biggest dimension of polarisation in Ireland at the moment, but I wouldn't be too complacent about this, because I mean, I think what's happened in America and the US, in America and the UK, often comes to us in the end just a little bit later. And it's hard to look at this data and think that what we're seeing is about a healthy democracy.
Okay, so what is it about?
Well, it's about the fact that market segmentation, technology is changing how people are fed things. And market segmentation is causing a much greater polarization in what people are engaging with, culturally and politically. And that's really not healthy because it makes it harder for us to understand each other. It makes it harder for us to have civil discourse. It makes us harder for different perspectives to come together to try to solve the same problems.
Okay, because there isn't even an agreed playing field, basically.
Because the overlaps, the common ground, the things that we can mutually agree about before we get to the things we disagree about become much harder. And again, there's good behavioral science on this. I mean, we can see that if people start from more situations of in-group versus out-group with less overlap and less common understanding, people find it harder to solve problems.
Okay. And pre-internet, was there naturally just more overlap between more diverse groups of people that people in their lives would encounter more people who thought differently to them and have to kind of rub along with them, yes?
Yes, absolutely. And we can see in the US data that's particularly strong. You can see how polarization has developed in the US data. And interestingly, it started before the internet. It's not only the internet. It actually started in the US in the 1960s. And the reason was cable news. So market segmentation of the kind of news and opinion and attitudes that people were being fed began in the US in the 1960s, which is why polarization started earlier in the US than elsewhere. What the internet has done is massively amplified that by making that market segmentation of what we watch, what we listen to, what we read much, much stronger.
Is there anything we can do about it?
Yeah, I had a feeling you were going to ask me that question. And I really have no silver bullet for this. But one of the things I do know is that, you know, if you're going to have a backlash against something, if you're going to try to fight back, and I think we do need to fight back about this, we've got to, because I think it's corrosive. If you're going to do that, you've got to start with at least the right diagnosis. And, you know, I think this is important because a lot of people are arguing, and I read a lot while I was researching this, that somehow what's happening between the genders is to do with the Me Too movement. And some
That is cited as a tipping point.
Right, it absolutely isn't. No. I mean, you look at the, I mean, it's a symptom, but it's not the cause. You look at the data and you can see this gap started opening up well before. The Me Too movement started in 2017. This gap started opening up well before and started accelerating really strongly from 2010 onwards. So it predates the Me Too movement. What's happening is something that's much deeper than that.
Okay. So, but in a roundabout way, what you're saying is you're not sure what the answer to this could be or what we can do to try and remediate.
We are going to have to change the way we interact with technology. And I don't know what that looks like yet. But we're going to have to. You can see the impact it's having on young people as well, which, as I say, is a debate for another day. But we're going to have to change. We're going to have to. And to do that, you've got to start, I think, by understanding better what it is that it's doing so that you can then start to come up with solutions. So it's diagnosis first, remedy second. But one just final point, really, Brandon, on this is every time I talk about this, I get people who get annoyed with me, more so than usual anyway. I get people who get annoyed because you're kind of implying that people don't know their own minds, that, you know, there's something kind of patrician about this, sort of suggesting that we're so easily influenced and that we're you're kind of suggesting the population is stupid or whatever. All I'm doing here is reporting data on how people how people form opinions, what they do with those opinions, how they vote, how they express. We can see in the data the effect that this stuff is having.
Okay. I know you want to finish up on that. Can I ask you a couple of other things, though? So if you look back on COVID and the response here, that somehow managed most people. It radicalized a lot of people down into rabbit holes from which they still haven't emerged. But it kind of did manage to bring everybody together into one common agreement or mood, didn't it? Was there anything that was done there like that it could be useful to us going forward? Have we learned anything from the kind of, I like to call it propaganda to annoy you, but it was extraordinarily powerful communication that did actually bring people completely together?
Yes. So you will have heard me say in this studio many times the expression collective action. I mean, what we did was during COVID, we persuaded people that if we all acted collectively in particular ways, we would all be better off. Now, there may very well be a solution to the issues, some of the issues that we are facing with that technology is presenting us with, that will have that kind of flavor where we all have to look at it and say, look, actually, if we all stop doing this, if we start behaving differently, if we start adopting these kind of things, we'll all be better off. So there may be a solution that starts to look like that and can be communicated like that. Okay. I don't know what that is, though.
Yeah. And collective action, it was probably easy when we're facing some kind of existential crisis, as it seemed at the time.
But also
collective action in good times, people don't have as much.
But also one that was quite easy to understand. I mean, it was quite easy to get the basic science of it across as to what the threat was, whereas here the threat is much more subtle and hard to understand.
So in the recent US election, we saw all this talk about that the bro vote helped get Trump over the line, that he was off doing all the, you know, Theo Von, Joe Rogan podcasts and everything, that he was, that there was an infrastructure there to speak to those young men. And there was comment at the time that the Democrats don't really have a Joe Rogan and they didn't have that same infrastructure. We became very aware of the gender gap among the young in this American election. You would say that that wasn't new either.
I wouldn't just say it. The data show it. I mean, actually, the gender gap was larger in the Biden-Trump election. So the gender gap for Biden, in other words, the proportion of women who voted for Biden over the proportion who voted of men who voted for Biden was 12 percentage points. And in the latest election, it was 10 in favor of Trump, men versus women. So the gender gap was actually larger in the previous one. Now, part of the reason it took on so much steam this time, though, was because it looked from the opinion polls like it was going to be bigger. In the event, it actually wasn't. So it was a double-digit gender gap again, but that's been true of the last five US presidential elections. And guess what? It started shortly after 2010.
And we are seeing it now in Europe, yes?
Absolutely, we're seeing it in Europe. Yeah, we're seeing it in multiple European countries. We're seeing it in Asian countries as well.
Yeah. Have you looked into South Korea? Because I've just read a few bits and pieces about it, and they seem to be suffering from a very extreme version of this in South Korea.
Yeah, so South Korea is a really interesting case in point, because there you have a country that is a really early tech adopter. So, you know, really high
internet. Okay.
You know, they were one of the first countries to roll out, go back to the 3G days. They were one of the first countries to roll out a 3G network because they could see some of the things that it was going to do economically, the beneficial things. But one of the interesting things that happened in South Korea is that technological revolution, the digital revolution, has interacted with what was a more conservative, particularly on gender issues, political culture, because they were a later developing country that was westernizing very quickly, but had much more conservative gender values than other Western countries would have. And interestingly, they've then experienced much greater polarization, particularly among young people, over the roles of men and women, over gender roles in society. So when you measure those in South Korea now, what you find is there's a really extreme difference in the sort of acceptance of gender roles and what gender roles ought to be, and acceptance of equality among young men and women in South Korea.
Okay, so that could be the canary in the coal mine. That could be the future of the next few years we're looking at.
Well, it's certainly a very good example, yeah.
Okay. But no answer. Magic wand, one thing we could do?
Well, with a bit of luck, I'll be back here in 5 or 10 years' time and we'll realise what the solution was and we'll have enacted it. Yeah, but I don't know
absolutely.
What it is, Brendan, I'm afraid.
We'll have a heated debate about it and everything. You know what, I'm going to suggest a humble solution. Everyone should come back to the monoculture and the mainstream media and mind that old internet. Turn on the wireless and listen to Radio Éireann and you'll be grand. Okay, Pete Lunn, Head of Behavioural Research at the ESRI. That's absolutely fascinating. And I think if that's the first time people have heard about that phenomenon, it's something we're going to be hearing a lot more about as time goes on, isn't it? Thanks, Pete.